Stats in a Wrap, the new podcast series from Eurostat.
J'habite en France et j'aime...
Captain Gerb, Eid, Ira, Amster...
Io sto morendo anch'io, io sto potendo
vivere a Parigi.
Voglio un Njemačko zbog toga što...
Welcome to another episode of Stats in a Wrap, the podcast series from Eurostat, the statistical office of the European Union. If you've been listening to our podcasts, you'll know that we think data are delicious, and we like nothing better than to slice, dice, and wrap them into bite-sized morsels while enjoying the intriguing stories, the fascinating conversations, and startling truths about the everyday and not-so-everyday stats that surround us. Well, in the Wrap Cafe today, we've a veritable feast for you. Parma and champagne, Rioja and Calvados, and more nuts than you could ever want to eat. I'm talking about food, of course, but also the regions of Parma in Italy, Champagne Ardennes on the border of France and Belgium, La Rioja, the autonomous community in northwestern Spain, and Calvados, the French department in Normandy. And the nuts? Well, stay with us and all will be revealed. So come on in, I'm Jonathan Elliott, your host for this episode. Now, if someone asked you to scientifically measure the well-being of a French family compared with a Maltese one, for example, or a Luxembourgeois with a German, how would you do it? If you had to rely on the national statistics of those countries, it would be a pretty crude process because they're very different sizes. You might want to break the countries down into comparable units of population and then measure those. Well, if you did, that simple act would unlock a treasure trove of insights on everything from life expectancy to employment, from broadband speeds to transport links. The myriad things, in fact, that affect all of us and affect the lives of 447 million people of the European Union. Country data tells you a lot. But regional data is where the magic happens. Making sense of those data, though, is no easy task. To guide us through it, we are lucky enough to have two experts. From Eurostat, Bianca Fogrub, a statistician at the Regional Statistics and Geographical Information Unit. Welcome, Bianca.
Hi, Jonathan. Thanks for having me.
And joining Bianca, we have Paolo Veneri at the OECD, where he heads up the Regional Analysis and Statistics Department. Welcome, Paolo.
Thanks, Jonathan. Nice to be on the show.
Now, as I mentioned in my introduction, later in the show, Paolo and Bianca, who have special knowledge, are going to be able to give their very personal estimations of some of the regions in Europe that enjoy especially attractive measures of quality of living. But first, I have to ask, where do you live in Europe? And what do you like about it? First of all, I'm going to ask Bianca, tell me about where you live in Europe and what you like about that part of the world.
I currently live in Luxembourg and I really enjoy the international atmosphere and the high cultural offer. And it's nice to be close to green areas and nature.
Paolo, I assume you live in Europe, although the OECD is a global organization, but I'm guessing you're based in Europe. Could you tell me, if you are, which part and why you like it?
I'm living in Paris, France, where the OECD, my organization, is based. And I definitely enjoy living in Paris because it's a beautiful city, it's very lively, dynamic, a bit crowded sometimes, but gives lots of opportunity in terms of services, leisure, education opportunities, and also, of course, jobs.
Fantastic. I'm going to ask, first of all, both of you to tell me a bit about your careers and how you got to what you're doing now. Bianca, tell me a little bit about what do you do every day at Eurostat when you're sitting down at your desk?
I work at Eurostat in the unit which is called Regional Statistics and Geographical Information. My main job, among other tasks, is being the editor of the regional yearbook. I'm not a statistician by education. I have a degree in geoinformatics and cartography. I'm working on the integration of geospatial and statistical information.
So you're a maps expert. That's how you kind of originated.
Yes, as a cartographer, I like to say a map can often tell much more than 5 pages of text or a long statistical table. To be meaningful and correct, maps need to respect some kind of rules, and this is my job to ensure that all the maps in the regional yearbook are correct and also visualize an interesting aspect of regional statistics.
We'll be talking more about that, and particularly the interactive maps, which have also been produced by Eurostat and are absolutely fascinating and rather beautiful, but we'll come on to those later. Paolo, you have the whole world at your feet. You're not just confined to Europe. You're surveying cities all over the world from your office in Paris. Now, just tell us a little bit about how you came to be doing this kind of work.
I'm an economist by training. Since I already at the start of my graduate studies, I focused on how economic activities happen in space. So that was my main interest in my graduate studies, which was Ancona in Italy, because cities look the more concrete objects, a more fascinating object to study and to investigate for me. I joined the OECD as an economist, and I am actually trying to analyze economics, well-being, measuring economic development, environmental transitions at the regional and the city level. So it's very much in continuity with what I studied in the past.
A lot of our listeners will have heard of the OECD, but they won't actually be as familiar with it as perhaps they are with the EU or the United Nations. So perhaps you could actually help us now, in a footnote, just explain a bit more about what the OECD does and what its 38 member states do.
Well, the OECD is an international organization in which governments work together to seek solutions to common problems, develop global standards, share experiences, and identify best practices. The ambition and with the objective to promote better policies for better lives. So this is the main role of the OECD. In other words, the OECD is a forum for policy dialogue and development, is a center for policy analysis and comparative data, and it's a facilitator to achieve harmonization, cooperation, and work sharing.
First, I feel like in the cities you have to take cars or you have to take more trains, more buses. In the countryside, it's easier to go places walking or by bike because it's smaller, so more people, I feel like, do it. And also, like, everything is cheaper because we have local business.
Comparing cities is a fiendishly tricky job because everyone is different and they all have hugely different histories. Their development is entirely different. And of course, so are countries for the same reason. But if you drill down to regional level and then drill again, so you're dealing with really quite small populations, maybe 1 to 2 million people, say, it gets easier to compare them. Bianca, can you just tell us why regional data compared to country data is so useful?
Most of Eurostat statistics aim to compare the member states, and national statistics is a bit like looking from a plane onto the earth. So while regional statistics is more like looking through a magnifying glass, and only regional data allows us to understand Europe in all its diversity, to compare cities with cities and rural areas with rural areas, what national data alone cannot do. So also, the communication aspect should be not underestimated. I'm from Germany originally, with a lot of regions and very strong regional identities. And most people want to know how their region is doing compared to the neighboring regions.
I think that most of people leave their countries from Bosnia and Herzegovina, from Croatia, from Serbia, from Czech Republic. Poland also, I think, all the Balkans leave their homes and go to the other countries for searching the better life.
I was just looking at the maps showing net migration in Europe, so which countries are seeing their populations declining. And at country level, it all looks like Central and Eastern Europe. But as soon as you get down to regional level, parts of France and southern Italy are seeing quite big outflows too. Paolo, and what's your take? I mean, is that what regional data gives us, a more nuanced, more granular feel for the actual people on the ground and what life is like for them?
Yes, I think looking at the specific places within a country helps understand what actually people experience in their daily lives. Many aspects of people's life can be understood properly only by zooming in where actually people work and live. And if you think about some very simple questions like how easy it is to find a job, or what's the quality of the air, or even what's the population dynamics. Is this is a specific place shrinking in terms of population or growing? We see that there is stark differences within a country.
So regional data gives us a much more in-depth understanding of people's experiences on the ground, and that makes it tremendously useful when you're making big spending decisions. Bianca, perhaps you could just set out for us who the people are who depend on regional data in order to make good, clear decisions. And so just talk us through who you're thinking about when you produce the yearbook, for example, and other stats.
Our goal is to provide statistics for, let's say, all types of users. We cannot afford to only serve like one category of users. So we usually can distinguish between four different user types. We have the, we call them VIP users, which are the policymakers and administrations in Brussels and in the member states. They usually want timely and comparable data, typically already aggregated for their purposes. And then we have the data miners. They are downloading everything. They want the most detailed data they can get. Then we have the tourists. They surf the internet. They look here and there until they find something they find interesting and or attractive. And obviously, they like nice visualizations and interactive tools. And last, we have the data farmers. For them, it is very essential that they can come back in defined intervals and they get every time the same data they need for their work in the same format and from the same place.
I love it that you've got profiles for all your different customers here. There are data miners. Are they just people who just love hoovering up big data? And what kind of people are they? Are they organizations or are they amateur enthusiasts? Or
they mostly have a professional interest in our data because they need it for either their job or business or because they carry out research doing a PhD at a university. Of course, you also have those who maybe just love numbers, but they're probably the minority.
The number freaks, right. Okay. Fantastic. I think I can fall into the category of a tourist. I'm a data tourist. There's no question about that. We will keep talking about the interactive edition, which I can't wait to talk more about. I felt I was a bit like a scuba diver going over a reef with the interactive maps of regional data in Europe. Great fun to see this beautiful array of dots of different data points that you could reach out and touch, and they did things and they move around. The dynamic interaction was wonderful. So as a tourist of data, I found that a wonderful visit. Now, back to the serious business of what this is used for and why. We're going to be talking in a minute about the European Regional Development Fund. It's interesting that in Europe, quite often, underdeveloped regions are mountainous ones and other areas far away from big population centres. It's almost as if wealth is concentrated in the built-up and urban regions and the metropolitan areas, and it's the rural populations that are sometimes needing to catch up.
Yes, for many, for several aspects related to economic development and well-being, it's true that we observe that on average, remoteness, being far away from centers, from accessing major services, can be a disadvantage. We can use regional statistics actually to understand what are the specific challenges that each type of regions can face.
So, Bianca, we must now turn to the financial and economic aspects of this in the form of the European Regional Development Fund. Huge and hugely important. Tell us why regional stats have such a bearing on how this vast pot of money is managed.
The ERDF, the European Regional Development Fund, is one of the structural funds of the EU and aims to reduce the inequalities between regions in Europe, which is what cohesion policy is mostly about. The fund supports all sorts of investments like infrastructure, the creation of jobs, the protection of the environment. All regions in Europe can benefit from the structural funds, but of course, poorer regions receive more money than richer regions. The structural funds represent about one third of the EU budget, so we are really talking about a lot of money. The allocations of these funds to the regions and projects should, of course, be objective, and this is where regional statistics come in. The allocation of the funds is mostly based on the economic situation of the so-called NUTS-2 regions, which are the middle-sized regions in a country. And so which of these regions are the ones that need help the most, and what exactly should be improved in those regions, only economy or also environmental aspects? And what kind of projects will have the biggest positive effect on the economy and the life of people? And therefore, define which regions need the most support and to monitor the effect of the cohesion policy. We need a wide range of regional statistics for that.
Oh, I'm assuming it's definitely cheaper to live in the countryside because, the accommodation is going to be cheaper. And then probably even like local bars or restaurants might be a bit cheaper. I'm not sure, but I guess they would be. And you probably end up going out less, so you probably end up spending less money in that way. cities are more expensive.
So regional stats are critical to the allocation of one third of the EU's entire budget, a staggeringly large sum of money, hundreds of billions of euros. And those stats are available to us all in several different formats, the yearbook, the interactive edition and the statistical atlas. Bianca, talk us through your year at Eurostat when you're working on these projects and how you put them together.
The regional yearbook comes out every year, as the name says, and it is structured in 13 chapters covering economic, social and environmental topics for which we have regional data. And many chapters are there every year, for example, on population or labor market or economy. But we also have special topics each year. So this year, to recognize the European Year of Youth 2022, we put the focus on young people across chapters, be it in the labor market or education chapter. We have a focus on cancer in the health chapter, where we could show some good progress. And of course, we wanted to show the effect of the COVID-19 crisis, that the COVID-19 crisis had on the regions, for example, for the life expectancy. The package now includes different products, digital and print, and hence is much broader compared to when the regional yearbook started in the early 1970s. And we still have a little print run, but our main distribution channels are digital now. We have the online PDF as the core product and Statistics Explained articles as more traditional publications. But more and more we present the information in interactive tools, such as the Regions in Europe Interactive Edition, where you can select and compare the regions that you're interested in.
Sure. Well, a little later in the podcast, we'll be touching on some of the amazing richness of data that we've got in the yearbook. There's everything here: population, health, education, labour market, economy, business, research and development, tourism. The list goes on, vital for anyone who wants to understand Europe and its regions. Our experts, Bianca and Paolo, will be revealing later in the podcast their top tips on which regions of Europe might offer the best quality of life. So stay with us. But first of all, I'd like to talk about some of the bigger themes in regional stats. And there's one in particular, the COVID pandemic. Regional data produced a huge wealth of really revealing insights on how Europe responded to the crisis. Paolo, just talk us through why these kinds of stats in particular have been so useful in understanding how the pandemic played out.
For the last edition of OECD Regions and Cities at a Glance, which is our the OECD flagship publication in terms of regional statistics, we carried out a study on the health impact of the pandemic across OECD regions, and we found that the death toll paid by some regions was much higher than the national average. So the health impact of the pandemic was not spread evenly within countries, but was actually pretty much concentrated. More specifically, during the first wave of the pandemic, for example, during the first months until the summer of 2020, we observed that mortality increased nearly in all regions, like 6% on average, but in some regions, notably in the largest metropolitan agglomerations such as London, Milan, New York, we observed an excess mortality that over 22 percentage points higher than in their respective countries, at least. In addition, we also found that there were some regional characteristics that were associated to higher health impact of the COVID-19. For example, regions having a weaker health system capacity, for example, lower amount of hospital beds or physicians per capita, but also poorer air quality, even lower trust in institutions. Those regions were hit harder than other regions. Finally, we also observed that regions that in a sense, we are more effective in reducing the mobility of people during the peak of the pandemic through lockdowns and other containment measures, that actually that type of policy paid off in terms of reduction in mortality in the following months. So All this analysis showed that the regional lens were quite useful in understanding where the impact was and what place characteristics were actually helping mitigating the impact of the pandemic.
Now, you will not spend long in the world of statistical data at the regional level before the word NUTS keeps coming up. NUTS 1, NUTS 2, NUTS 3. They're all critical terms when you're discussing the regions. And this has nothing to do with the mental health of statisticians, nor their dietary preferences. Bianca, what's with the NUTS thing?
The NUTS, it's of course an acronym. It's the so-called nomenclature of territorial units for statistics. We already mentioned in the European Union, due to different national setups of the administrative levels, the regions are very different, both in terms of size and population. It is very difficult to compare small regions such as Malta or Luxembourg with regions in a big country like Germany. Like the first level, the NUTS 1 level, can have regions with around 20 million inhabitants. So you need a system to make the regions as much as possible comparable. And the NUTS classification defines how regions in the EU member states should be classified, depending on their population size and their administrative level. So we have three different levels. It's level one, are the larger regions, for example, like the Länder in Germany, such as Bavaria. Level two are sub-regions of those regions. And level three are then again sub-regions of those sub-regions.
So there is a method to measure the size of all the regions, and it is wonderfully simple. You basically put a grid over the whole of the EU, kilometer square grid cells, and you measure the population density for each cell. When you zoom out from that mosaic, you get your map of population density and the size of each region. Bianca, is that how it works?
Kind of, but of course, in the end, the NUTS mainly mirror the administrative division of a country. But indeed, we use the grid to classify the regions in a different way by their population density. And by using the grid cells, we can determine how concentrated is the population. People live more in cities or are they scattered in smaller settlements? And by defining this concentration level, you can then classify regions and municipalities into cities, towns, or rural areas. And the grid is also very useful for spatial analysis, for instance, in understanding how accessible public services, for example, hospitals are for the population. And lastly, unlike the administrative regions, the grid is a continuum, so it doesn't stop at the border. This is particularly useful when looking at effects of human activity, for example, on the environment, and to see patterns and trends. As an example, air pollution or a forest usually don't stop at the border.
I suppose we're in the world of maps again, because territorial boundaries tend to be determined by a huge variety of things, history, geography, language, culture, just to name a few, but rarely, if ever, by population size. And that's just people. Then there's the natural world as well, forests, lakes and rivers, agricultural land. To make meaningful comparisons in such a huge variety of countries and peoples, one of the most powerful tools are maps. And boy, there are some wonderful maps out there. The EU is a cartographer's wonderland, to be sure.
Maybe try Amsterdam or Rotterdam or somewhere with not many cars, and where I could ride my bike and go to the office once or twice a day. I would like to try a medium city with good bicycle options.
Paolo, you're an economist specializing in cities, and one of your tasks is to compare hugely diverse urban centers like for like, which sounds almost impossible. I mean, how do you compare Cordoba with Riga or Sao Paulo with Paris? I mean, these are wildly different, and yet it's your job to make them comparable.
It's our job. Organizations like the OECD or Eurostat have to provide international statistical comparisons. Therefore, it is very important to always associate statistical indicators of two comparable units and compare like we like. For example, in the case of cities, comparability across countries are very hard if you don't rely on an harmonized definition. Why? because while for regions we have the Eurostat classification, NAS2 or NAS3, so the small regions and large regions, which also the OECD applies similarly, for cities, the administrative boundaries of municipalities or of cities are extremely different across countries. And they are the results of, let's say, long-standing administrative and historical processes in each country. If you compare, for example, just very simple indicator like the size of a city in terms of population, and you pick the administrative unit of two large cities in Europe, for example, Rome and Paris, and you will see that Paris, the municipality of Paris, is much, much smaller than the actual city of Paris, that what we at the OECD, we refer to cities. In the case of Rome, instead, the municipality is large enough to capture most of the city. And this is why you mentioned before that the grid, the capacity to measure population at the regular size level, like a population grid, like the square kilometer. So having a grid allows to decide what's the threshold of density that we define as to be a city density. And therefore, we stop boundaries of the city where we see until a certain level of density. And this is very important because it really helps us understanding where the city stops, where the surrounding areas of the cities, what we call the commuting zone, so the suburban area of the city stop, and also to identify what we call functional urban area or metropolitan areas, which is the area identifying the economic boundaries of cities. So,
I think it would be cheaper to live in a city because you can rely on public transport. You don't have to have a car. But I think renting prices are much higher in the city. But I would still say it's cheaper to live in the city.
There are some unique characteristics of cities which make them unusual places because many have higher numbers of migrants, they have higher numbers of young people, they have more expensive housing. Paolo, just tell us a little bit about what makes cities so unusual. What can we point to as unique or special features of cities compared to other areas?
There are many, many things that make cities special and that makes large cities different from smaller cities. I will pick one example now, which is very recent, and it only concerns large cities in our data. For example, after COVID-19, we observed that housing prices have changes within the large metropolitan areas. We observed that while prices are increasing everywhere, they are increasing faster in suburban locations, so in places that are not really central in the city center, but are more peripheral, where it's more affordable to buy more space and larger flats, for example, larger houses. And this happens since the start of the pandemic. We observe a change.
And despite the widely reported flight to the suburbs and countryside during the pandemic, remote working also really took off dramatically in cities as well. Can you explain that?
The share of remote workers increased between 2019 and 2020, for example, in all places, but in cities much faster. It tripled in cities and it increased by 70% in other areas like rural areas, for example. One reason is because of the type of worker that are more prevalent in cities. In cities, there are workers working in occupations that are most amenable of remote working compared to in other places. And also in sectors that in which remote working is more, is more used than in other sectors. But that's not the whole story. There is also the fact that in cities or close to cities, there are generally we observe much better quality internet connection. And this is also important for ensuring the possibility of remote working.
Paris, because it's a very beautiful city and it has a lot of things to do, and I really like arts, I really like fashion, I really like this artsy side of things, and I think you can see that there a lot, and there's a lot of people that also have the same interests as there, so I think it would be easy to make friends there for me.
It's time now to talk about the yearbook and some of its more intriguing findings. One of them is about the age of populations in different regions. Bianca, there's something about age and Germany. Can you just talk us through that?
In the last editions of the regional yearbook, we have developed, as I find, very attractive and informative infographics, which put the focus on one topic or question. For example, which EU regions had the highest and lowest share of young people aged from 15 to 29? And looking at this infographic, you can see directly the top five and bottom five regions in Europe. So for this example, out of the top five, three are located in Germany, but also the lowest five regions are located in Germany, which is maybe a bit surprising, but this illustrates the big variety we can find within one single country. And if we have a closer look, we can see that four out of the top five regions are medium-sized university cities. So most of the young people have probably moved to these regions for their studies. At the lower end, we find rather five rural regions in the eastern part of Germany. Young people tend to move away from these regions, maybe because of the economic situation is difficult there, or there are fewer interesting jobs.
It's within one country, but that's a survey as a result of a survey of all 27. I mean, all 1,000 plus regions. What's fascinating is that they've all found themselves in Germany.
I think in the south of Spain and the south of Italy, there are many people living the regions. For example, in Barcelona, I meet people from every region of Spain and every region of Italy also. They move to Barcelona. They prefer Barcelona to Italian cities. I don't know why.
The wonder of these graphics is that they do reveal so much information that's thought-provoking, and it sort of opens up more questions. They get you thinking. Now, we've come to the section of the podcast where our experts reveal which parts of Europe they would recommend as places to live. After many, many sleepless nights of study and careful analysis of all the figures for Stats in a Wrap, our experts will be telling us which one of Europe's 1,166 regions they would recommend if a friend came to them and said, well, I'd really like to live somewhere different to where I'm living now. I can go anywhere. I've got a portable job. Tell me, where is the best place to live? Paolo.
It depends, of course, on what people are looking for. If you are looking for a region with the best air quality, for example, and you could go to North Finland or Central Northland Sweden, or Upper Norrland in Sweden. These are the regions in the EU where we observe the highest air quality. If instead you want to go to a region where you are expected to live longer when you are born, then we have some Mediterranean regions, like, for example, Corsica, Balearic Islands, or Epirus in Greece. So in these regions, life expectancy at birth is higher than 83 years old or even 84. On the other hand, if you are looking for a job, you want to know the regions with the highest employment rate, then you could go to North Brabant in the Netherlands, or Zeeland in the Netherlands, or Holland in Finland.
Bianca, you've been asked by a friend, I'm coming to Europe, where should I live? What would you say?
By looking at our data and the different indicators for example, social life, economy or environment, I tried to narrow it down to actually two regions. So if you aim for a long and healthy life where people tend to live long, and if you want your children to enjoy a very good education and good job opportunities, I can offer you two options. So if you prefer tapas and a hot and dry climate, I would recommend you Madrid. And if you better prefer the Nordic cuisine, the sea, and occasional rain showers, then I can recommend you Copenhagen. Copenhagen, by the way, has a big advantage, as the internet connection is very good. So teleworking is easy from there. Of course, there are many, many other great places in Europe to live in, and life is not only defined by official regional statistics.
So Copenhagen or Madrid, basically, are your two top recommendations. I can see a part of the Interactive Edition 2023 having a questionnaire where you can tick box all the things that matter to you, and it will tell you at the end ranked regions that answer your priorities. It will be a smash hit. You don't have to thank me for that idea.
We have it on our development list now to develop a tool like that.
Good. All right. So I haven't. That's not my not an original idea. Never mind. All right then. I can't claim credit for that. Never mind. Thank you very much. We are out of time, unfortunately, and we must wrap the wrap. It only remains for me to say thank you very much to our amazing contributors for a very wide-ranging discussion. To Bianca Forgrub from the Regional Statistics and Geographical Information Unit at Eurostat. Thank you, Bianca.
Thanks, Jonathan. It was really nice to be on the podcast.
Thanks very much. And to Paolo Veneri at the OECD's Regional Analysis and Statistics Department. Thank you, Paolo.
Thanks, Jonathan. Glad to be on the show.
If you've enjoyed the show, don't forget to share with friends and colleagues where Stats in a Wrap can be found on Spotify, Apple, Google, and all the usual places. And if you'd like to know more about the subjects discussed today, use the search terms Stats in a Wrap, Eurostat. And of course, join us for the next episode, when the Wrap Cafe will be dishing up more flavoursome insights, this time about the epic story of the EU's 2020 agricultural census, a survey so big it can only happen every 10 years, and it involves quizzing 9 million farmers, and this time it had to be done in the middle of a pandemic. Join us then to find out more, but for now, goodbye. We in the Wrap Cafe are thrilled to see the podcast getting a lot of attention and our listeners are growing in number. But to make our episodes even more delicious, we need your help and would be very grateful if you'd complete a very short survey. It only takes a few minutes and you can find it by searching Eurostat, Stats in a Wrap, and clicking on the survey pop-up.